Hello and welcome to the show. This is Ross Laguza, and for over 30 years, I have consulted on hundreds of high-stakes, complex, bet-the-company kinds of civil cases all over the country. Along the way, I've worked with thousands of the best lawyers, trained hundreds of fact and expert witnesses, and yes, participated in numerous jury selections. Today, I'm your 15-minute jury consultant. During the episodes of this podcast, I hope to provide trial lawyers, law students, jury consultants, basically anyone interested in the jury decision process with strategic insights, best practice tips, and plain talk designed to help you take your persuasion game to the next level. So it's a huge case, and the judge has allowed a written questionnaire to go out to the jurors in advance. So, if we ask the right questions, we could actually learn a lot about the panel and be smarter when exercising strikes. Unless the questionnaire is too long, too repetitive, and has too many questions that provide information that is not helpful. Regrettably, in my many long years of doing this work, 99% of the questionnaires that go to the jury have these three problems: too long, too repetitive, too many questions that aren't helpful. In the ideal, the questionnaire should be short. Why? Because prospective jurors experience answer fatigue, or they get angry when they have to answer so many questions, pages and pages of questions, especially ones that seem to be asking the same thing over and over, perhaps a little differently. When you give jurors a 30 to 50 page questionnaire, which is typical, they are overwhelmed. Nobody wants to do this. You wouldn't want to do it. If I gave you a 30 page questionnaire, you would punch me, probably. Most people have never had to fill out anything this long in their whole life. I mean, even when I did my PhD comprehensive, there were only like six questions. And when jurors get fatigued and or frustrated, the quality of their answers drops dramatically, and they're just trying to get through this monster of a questionnaire. We want good data, not just any data. And collecting all this information without really knowing how it fits together to predict juror orientation sometimes can actually distract you and make your decision process much more complicated than it needs to be. Remember, you're going to be making decisions with very little time and when you're under a lot of pressure. So the biggest problem is that the typical questionnaire is crammed with items that sound interesting, perhaps on the surface at the very broadest level, but don't really tell us what we need to know. Remember, we are looking for people who hold extreme positions on those attitudes and values which correlate with juror orientation in our case. Another problem with long questionnaires is you get them back. And if you have a sizable panel, and I've seen some over 200, processing long questionnaires takes a veritable army of people to go through them. And there often isn't the time required to do that and weigh all of that information in a meaningful way. Here are some examples, just a few, of questions that don't help us, but they're always on jury questionnaires. For example, the education, the job information of the prospective juror's spouse and children. They're not going to be on the jury. Who cares what they do or where they went to school? It doesn't matter. Okay, one of my other favorites, bumper stickers. People like to ask about bumper stickers. By the way, years ago, I actually did look into this quite extensively, and I can tell you there's no correlation between bumper stickers and what kind of juror someone's going to be. There's nothing there. Forget bumper stickers. Likewise, you can skip asking people the three people they admire most. Again, interesting, but it's not going to help you. You can also skip over all those questions about their TV shows, what movies they like, what news organization they follow. Once they hear the facts of your case, their prevailing attitudes about your client's industry, let's say it's the oil and gas industry, and they have a lot of problems with environmental issues or the price of gas or whatever it is, that's going to make them much more dangerous. I realize no one's going to believe this one, but general perceptions of lawsuits, lawyers, damages. Plaintiffs always want to ask about whether people will award damages or whether they have a bias against damages. The problem is that in practice, any juror will award high damages if the facts support it. So asking someone in advance a bunch of questions that try to get at a bias against damages isn't particularly useful. I know this won't discourage you from asking that question, but asking many questions about past experience in lawsuits or perceptions of lawyers or lots of questions on damages are not helpful. Another area that isn't helpful is general psychological questions about how people feel about the world. Do they think it's a fair world? What do they think about attributing blame to others? What is their personality? Sure, these are great on a dating app, but otherwise, it's just not specific enough to tell you what you need to know. So just one way to think about questions, the farther you get away from a specific behavior and a specific attitude, the less useful a question will be. So at the extreme, asking someone their astrological sign would be far too general. Now, I've not seen a lawyer use astrological sign before, but I'm not saying it hasn't been done. Here's a quick example of a very specific kind of attitude that's relevant to a case and in combination with other attitudes can help you start identifying more dangerous people. So in a pharmaceutical case, if you're a defendant, you want to ask, do you strongly agree that prescription drugs should be 100% safe? Now, why is this a good question? Well, hopefully, because you've tested your case empirically, your expert can use statistics and can show that this item actually correlates with the plaintiff orientation. And by the way, this is actually true. This particular item is part of a well-supported statistical profile of strong plaintiff jurors in pharma cases. Okay, most people will not agree with such an extreme attitude, perhaps only 25 to 30%, and only about 10 to 15% will strongly agree with this item that all drugs should be 100% safe. So that makes it a good question, even on its own, as a way of identifying extreme jurors. When you combine this item with 5 to 10 similar items that have also been tested that also relate to jury decision-making in a particular case, you can specify just how remarkable someone is. You might be able to make an argument for cause based on those answers, but at least you know you must follow up with this person and probably strike them. So I think because there's so much misinformation about what data we need on prospective jurors that we just want to throw everything in the questionnaire without regard to the relative importance of specific items or without regard to the frustration we are causing those who have to fill it out. Now, it's important to understand that these questions aren't magic. They just significantly improve our accuracy above chance guessing. Linger on that for a moment. We are merely trying to do better than chance. That's our goal with any technique or tool. And the advantage of using the empirical approach is you can actually say just how much better than chance your set of questions really are. And if you can improve by 20 or 30 points, that's fantastic. That should be the goal. But they're not magic. And so when you might see someone on paper that looks great or looks dangerous, and then when you see them in the courtroom, and perhaps if you get a chance to follow up with them, they quickly present a different profile to you. This happens. It doesn't happen a lot, but it does happen. So you have to understand that the questions help you narrow down your focus and help you improve your odds, but you're still dealing with a lot of variability. Once I have all the questionnaires in front of me, I use a 5-point scale. I use a 1 for those few people who the other side's probably going to strike because they look too good to be true for us. I use a 5 for those that are the most dangerous, and there are not that many times. I'm very, very stingy at giving out ones or fives. They really have to be on the extreme. So ones we love, fives we hate. Threes are in the middle, but they're not necessarily neutral. We may just not know enough about them to rate them with any degree of specificity, or in fact, they are moderate. We just don't know. But probably they're not exceptionally dangerous. So our goal then is to get the fives off our cause. If possible, we want to knock out as many fours, which are higher risk jurors. They're just not in the extreme. And now, for the simple thing that I actually do after I've scored the questionnaires that helps you know instantly in the moment whether a particular juror is extremely dangerous or not. So what I do is when I go through each questionnaire, I create one page, and the top half of that page is reserved for those target questions, again, somewhere between 5 and 15 at the most, that we think do the best job at identifying our most dangerous jurors. And the second half of the page, I reserve for any other kinds of notes or standout kinds of things that we want to note about what we learned in the questionnaire. But it's only one page, and I do not ever go over one page. So I've created this scoring sheet with only the items that I'm especially focused on. And I'm recording on this one-page scoring sheet the answers to the questions. So I have the juror's name, their number, and their answers to the key questions on the top half, and on the bottom half, other information that comes from the questionnaire that we want to include on this one sheet. After I've scored all of the questionnaires, I go through on that top half and I just draw a line around the questions where people answered them in a dangerous direction. Okay. And that line that I draw will make some sort of a shape. The more unusual someone's answers are, the more they have answered in a dangerous direction, the shape changes. And so then what I can do is I look for patterns that are unusual, shapes that are unusual. And so then when during jury selection, okay, I have these sheets in a binder. That's all I have. Sure, there's boxes of the actual questionnaires that the lawyers may need for follow-up. But for me, I just have a binder of these one sheets. And then as the jurors being interviewed or as they are sitting in the box, I can turn to that juror, and I have them alphabetically and numerically. So I look at the one sheet for a particular juror. I instantly see how they were scored. Were they a 3, a 4, a 5? Were they a 2 or a 1? But also, I can see how unusual their particular answer set is. I can look at the shape, and I instantly know this person is unusual compared to everyone else. So then in the moment, I can turn and I can tell the lawyer just how unusual this juror is without going through their questionnaire again at the table, without doing all this other work. And so it makes you much speedier. If you look at the other side, they'll often have the raw questionnaires. They might have pages of notes and things that they are consulting or their jury consultant is looking at. That takes time. And it sometimes leads to them making mistakes. We can go fast. And I find that sometimes when we go fast, we force them into making a mistake. We force the other side into going too fast, and they will make a mistake. I know that sounds incredibly simple, but drawing those shapes really saves a lot of time in the moment. You just instantly know, because you've looked at it, this is an unusual juror and we need to be careful with them. So if you do get a questionnaire, you want to make sure that it's no longer than it absolutely needs to be. And you want to make sure that it's strategic, where you are asking the questions that really help you do better than chance guessing. And remember, that's what we're looking for. People who answer in a dangerous direction, but do so in a way that's different from everybody else, that makes them dangerous and different. And that is usually not a good place for us to be. Those aren't the people we want to be talking to. Thank you for joining me for this episode. If you know a lawyer or anyone who you think will like this show, please share it with them. You can send email with your questions to me, and I may address these questions on a future episode. The email address is in the show notes. Take care.